Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 a.m. And it's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we're going to we got some Thanksgiving stories that we're going to talk about. We're a couple of weeks away from Thanksgiving, and we got some turkey and Thanksgiving stories we're going to get to, and how people name their dogs and some most popular dog names, that kind of thing. Also having some fun here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let me say that welcome back Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right, how you been?
Okay. Swamped as ever.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of stuff to talk about. And we want to get to, you've got a lot of stuff here that you've written about. And I also want to talk about the propositions for the midterms. You have the TV ballot propositions for the midterms. Why don't we start with that? Tell everybody what this was all about.
This is something that I first did in 2016 when I was being amused by all of the strange things that California voters got to vote for in that particular election. We legalized marijuana and a bunch of other fun things that year, and I proposed 10 or 11 ballot measures that year for the television industry. And this year, when we actually had a lot less amusing stuff on the ballot, it was a kind of disappointing California ballot once the courts ruled that the strange thing that was proposed to split California into three different states,
right.
Once they said that that wasn't constitutional, there wasn't anything truly fun on the ballot anymore. And so I proposed a number of things, mostly for my own convenience. It turns out that if you attempt to draft the laws, you can draft the laws to suit your purposes. So among the things on my ballot propositions and measures were some proposal to somehow curb Netflix's rampant, excessively long episodic drama lengths.
Right.
I believe that I proposed a 50-minute cap for all episodes. You can go up to 55 minutes when approved by an in-house board, and then up to an hour, but only then when approved by an impartial outside committee. I feel like this is a very good idea. I would also be totally willing to sit on the outside committee so that I could vote that basically no episode of television should ever be over an hour. There is simply no excuse if you have over an hour of television. What do you say you put some of it into the next hour? There's just no excuse to it. When I get pull out a screener and I see that the running time on the pilot is up, you know, an hour and 6 minutes or something, I wince. When I get to the finale of a season and I see that the finale is an hour and 17 minutes, I very frequently scream in impotent rage. So I felt like someone needed to finally take this on hard, and so that was one ballot measure I proposed. Problem is, I don't know how any of these actually did, because for some reason, none of the results have been reported in any of the news media that I've looked at. So it's a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Did you have any favorites from amongst my group?
Well, I thought you gave it to Saturday Night Live a little bit there about you know, you're never going to let him off the hook, and I don't think you should. You're never going to let him off the hook for having Trump host. And so tell everybody about what you said there about SNL.
Just simple equal time.
Yeah.
And not that pesky equal time where if you have Donald Trump host, you have to give commercial time to the other 17 dwarfs running for president on the Republican side. No, I'm just saying that any time SNL is being all glib and proud and superficially edgy about how they're sticking it to Donald Trump, how they're, you know, everyone's being like, ooh, Alec Baldwin zinged him again. All I want is a little picture-in-picture screen in the lower right-hand corner of that wonderful, glorious night that Lorne Michaels gave the entire show over to Donald Trump's presidential campaign. And just, you know, a friendly reminder that maybe not so edgy 2 years ago. I believe it was like 2 years ago It was November of 15.
Yeah.
Man, time does fly. So yes, that, you know, so when Michael Che and Colin Jost are doing their, we're zinging it to the president, all I want is a friendly reminder to everyone that Lorne Michaels put a lot of effort into normalizing Donald Trump back in 2015, and maybe that wasn't the best thing to do, and maybe he hasn't really expressed any real regret on it. But, you know, that maybe that's just me holding a grudge.
I think it is, but that's okay. What about TV Favorites Return Reauthorization Act?
Well, this was something that I proposed on the ballot back in 2016, and among the people who I suggested needed to return to television in that particular ballot, they included Jennifer Garner, John Goodman, Jennifer Aniston, Connie Britton, and all of those people have subsequently either had regular television shows, in some cases several. I feel like Connie Britton goes from show to show to show to show.
Right.
Or in the case of Jennifer Aniston, they have a show that is going to come someday on, not Facebook, hers is on Apple TV, I think, or is going to be on Apple someday. So basically, it's just setting up a fund to bring a bunch of people who I think need to come back to television. And among the people I listed who could benefit this year include Kyle Chandler. Guy needs a good new TV show.
Yeah.
Halle Berry. I think it's really time for Halle Berry to be front and center in a good cable drama. I think the fact that she came back to TV to do a summer sci-fi drama on CBS is one of the more peculiar things of our time. That and the fact that that series, Extant, if memory serves, actually got a second season and possibly a third, but I think maybe only a second. I think Linda Cardellini, who everyone is saying is going to get nominated for an Oscar for Green Book. Have you seen that one yet?
I have not seen it yet, no.
Everyone says she's really good, and if she gets an Oscar nomination, that would be awesome. That just, to my mind, should raise her TV series ask. I think she needs a good TV series. And then, whatever happened to Joey Pants? Whatever happened to Joe Pantoliano?
That's a good question. I love Joey Pants.
I hope he's okay. Yeah. I hope he's okay. I really do. He had that great long time as everyone's favorite character actor, and then he won an Emmy for Sopranos, and, you know, utterly, totally, completely deserved.
Yeah.
And then there was that brief window where everyone was like, okay, let's try giving him a couple TV series, and none of them actually, unfortunately, stuck. He was the lead in Dr. Vegas. That didn't go
very well. Oh, wow. I totally forgot about that.
He was the second lead, or paired with Rob Lowe. Let's see. He was the lead in CBS's The Handler, which was a show that wasn't horrible and could have been decent. So, look, if he's decided that he wants to spend time in retirement with Dennis Franz and Gene Hackman and a few other people, bless him. But, you know, if he's out there and saying, why has no one brought me a good TV show, I hope that this particular imaginary ballot measure will raise money to bring him back to the small screen, because I feel like the time is now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I love Joe Pantoliano. Always have, always will. What about the definition of insanity redefinition?
I'm just sick and tired of having allegedly smart characters on TV shows give the fake Albert Einstein quote that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Albert Einstein didn't say that. Nobody reputable said that. And so every time an allegedly smart character says that, it turns my brain off in roughly the same way that anytime a smart character misuses begs the question, anytime a smart character says that someone is chomping at the bit, there's just this whole series of really dumb, really avoidable things where I'm particularly baffled that they slip through in writers' rooms. Like, you figure a writers' room of 10 people or 7 or 8 people, one of them will say, okay, let's not use begs the question in that context because we're misusing it. That's all I want, is one person to say that. And so my ballot measure is some sort of penalty attached to having an allegedly smart character misquote Albert Einstein, because nothing makes your smart character look stupider than that.
You know, I love that you point, and I, you know, I love that you point out John Oliver in this. And I mean, because I adore John Oliver, and I think he's brilliant. And I think his show is great, but that's pretty funny that you called him out on Begs the Question.
He misused it. I would say two episodes out of three at some point last year, but earlier this fall, he had one of those contexts in which he would have used it, and he said, raises the question. And I wonder if that is an example of somebody in the writer's room finally having the gumption to say, dude, you're a smart guy. Just don't do that.
Right.
And that's all I want is for one person in a writer's room to know what an actual idiom is and to make sure that the people on the show use it correctly.
You know, it's really funny, Dan, that you pointed all that out. We spent a significant amount of time the other morning talking about words and phrases that are misused that people might not know the definition to because they're saying it wrong. And that, you know, that's always a very popular topic. We get a lot of phone calls and a lot of texts about that. But it started out with there was a list of words that we were talking about that people, maybe you don't know the meaning of this word or using this phrase in the wrong way. And, of course, the first one on the list is literally. You know, like when someone says, oh, yeah, I watched this movie and it literally my head blew off. And, of course, that's not possible because you're talking and you still have a head. So, but that's how it started, and we always get into these kind of that kind of minutia. So,
yes, and the thing is, literally can be used correctly because some things actually are literal.
Yeah.
But begs the question is just never used right, and so people should just know that if they're planning on using it, especially if they're planning on using it in the context of it being a replacement for raises the question, they're just using it wrong and they should just not use it. It's just that simple. Whereas literally you can literally use the word literally correctly.
Right, you can, and you just did. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we'll get to some TV stuff that he's reviewed and talk about some of the other stuff that's on TV right now. Yeah, you can read him in The Hollywood Reporter, follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, we'll take a break for the news and we'll come back more with Dan Feinberg. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Thursday morning. And that's Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about top dog names. We're also going to talk about some Thanksgiving related topics coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Right now, though, Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk about TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Seen the trailer for this, and it looks pretty interesting to me. And that's the Netflix, The Kominsky Method. Tell us about that.
The Kominsky Method is Netflix's latest Chuck Lorre series. Everyone has, of course, vivid and deeply sentimental attachment to Disjointed, Chuck Lorre's last Netflix series, starring Kathy Bates as proprietress of a marijuana dispensary. Mm-hmm. What, you don't remember Disjointed? I promise it existed. Scout's Honor. This one, unlike Disjointed, is a single camera comedy, a little bit like Chuck Lorre's Young Sheldon, which is a show that I strongly defend as being okay or slightly better than you think it probably is.
Right.
And Kominsky Method is a story of two lifelong friends. One of them, played by Michael Douglas, is Sandy Kominsky, a Tony-winning actor who has become an acting coach in Los Angeles, a little bit like Henry Winkler's character in Barry. Mm. And the other is played by Alan Arkin, and he's Norman, and he's Sandy's longtime agent and agent to a number of other, let's say, 60s, 70s, 80s stars, maybe not so many current people. And really, it's just a show about their friendship. You know, Sandy has, the Michael Douglas character has had some unsuccessful relationships, and he's sort of picking up a new fling with one of the women in his acting class, played by the suddenly ubiquitous Nancy Travis, and his daughter's played by wonderful scene-stealing character actress Sarah Baker, who I love in everything and wish someone would give her a wonderful vehicle. And Norman is distracted because his wife, played by Susan Sullivan, has cancer, and so Norman is examining his own life and his own mortality. And it really is this show about these two guys who are perhaps a little bit past their peak and who are discovering that, you know, sometimes their bodies are failing them, sometimes their careers are failing them, but they're still sticking to it and being friends. To me, when it works, it's playing things as seriously as possible with occasional humorous beats, in the same way that I think that Chuck Lorre's CBS comedy Mom is a great show when it sort of delves into the serious side of addiction, which is kind of the show's backdrop. There's a lot of very broad comedy, you know, ha ha ha, old men have trouble with, you know, peeing, ha ha ha. There's like an entire episode and a half that's largely about urinary flow. I believe that my review said that it puts the P in AARP because, you know, I'm hilarious.
Oh, man.
Look, sometimes you got to, Nick. It's how we keep the days entertaining.
Right.
And there's a great cameo from Danny DeVito as Michael Douglas's urologist. And so Danny DeVito and Michael Douglas are and have been just a wonderful comic team.
Yeah.
And I would watch those two interact a long time. And so the stuff with the urologist, it's such familiar, ha ha ha, here's a prostate exam, isn't this awkward and embarrassing stuff that you've seen on so many sitcoms. But Danny DeVito really makes it genuinely funny in a way that it probably wouldn't have been otherwise. It's a show with good heart, but more than anything, it's a show with Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin doing things that they're good at yeah. the center. And I enjoyed watching them do that, especially Alan Arkin, who I think is just really great here.
Yeah. Well, he's just, you know, Alan Arkin's one of my favorites. And when does this start streaming, or has it started streaming?
I believe it starts streaming next Friday, not this Friday.
Okay.
Lose track of the various Fridays when they run into print deadlines and whatnot. So
gotcha.
we had our review up a tiny bit early on this one.
Okay. All right, so that's The Kominsky Method on Netflix with, sounds like a stellar cast. I will definitely get into that.
It's very brief also. It's only 8 half-hour episodes.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's a breeze regardless.
Okay, cool. There you go. That's The Kominsky Method on Netflix. You know, I saw a preview for, I don't know if you've seen it yet or if you've watched it yet, but there's a, and I'm blanking on the name of the show, but it's Ben Stiller's an executive producer on it, and it's Benicio del Toro, Patricia Arquette.
Escape from Dannemora.
Yeah. Have you seen that yet?
I've only seen one episode. The THR review is going to be a Tim Goodman review, so I will get to it at some point because I am a huge fan of the prison escape genre. It is really probably one of my favorite genres. You know, whether it's the original Papillon, whether it's I include prisoner of war dramas also, so you can throw in Great Escape, Escape from Alcatraz.
Yeah.
Wonderful movie, one of my favorites.
Yep.
And the first episode I thought was really good. Patricia Arquette's fantastic. Benicio del Toro's good. Paul Dano's good. I look forward to watching more. What did you think?
Oh no, I haven't seen it yet. I saw the trailer for it, and I know it doesn't come on for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's a couple of weeks. I wasn't sure if somehow you'd seen the pilot. No, it's good. It's a slow burn. It is definitely, you know, they don't rush into the escaping from the title all that quickly. It's a lot of laying the context. It's one of those truth is stranger than fiction stories, and so the relationship between the Patricia Arquette character and the Paul Dano and Benicio del Toro Del Toro characters are very, it's a sticky relationship. It's an odd relationship. And Ben Stiller directed the entire series.
Oh, he did.
And he's very, yeah, he did. And he's very clearly mining a certain 70s aesthetic, and I dig it. I'm looking forward to watching more. I hope that subsequent episodes hold up to what I enjoyed about the first episode.
Yeah, I mean, it looked intriguing to me, and obviously the cast is pretty great, and so we'll give that one a look when it comes out in a couple of weeks on Showtime. I understand that Kidding got renewed. Am I nuts, or is that true?
That is true, and and you know, look, there's nothing wrong with Showtime wanting to have a relationship with Jim Carrey, and also with each passing week, I love so much more about the series. The more I think about it, the more Jim Carrey is probably the thing I like least about it. But I think that there have been some really great moments and very, very good episodes of that show as it nears its finale this weekend, I believe.
Yeah. I think it's great. I really do. And I agree with you. I think, you know, each episode gets better and better. I think my favorite episode so far that really moved me, I'm moved by that show frequently, by what happens on that show, and I think that all the performances are really, really great. But the episode where Jim Carrey puts on the show for the girl who's dying from cancer, with all the songs, and he puts the show on for her, I thought that was just absolutely beautiful. I was really, really deeply moved by that episode.
I thought that was great, but just on a it is a comedy, so people should know they can laugh.
Yes, yes.
The episode with Tara Lipinski, her fake sister Sarah, and their friendly bird, the parakeet.
Yeah, yeah.
That was hilarious.
It was
that,
really
that was like absurdist, wonderful. It was that was right in my sweet spot.
Yeah.
And they've done a few things like that. And as I keep saying, I think Frank Langella is remarkable in this show.
He's great. He's absolutely great. So is Catherine Keener. But Langella is just got, he hits all the marks really well. Because he's really, like, his performance, although, you know, obviously, you know, realistic, he's hilarious. I think I laugh the most at Frank Langella when I watch Kidding. I think that he's the character that makes me laugh the most.
And every beat that he plays is truly unexpected because he's kind of positioned as the antagonist in the show. He's the one who is ready to move on in case the main character, Pickles, Mr. Pickles, has gone insane and is going to have to be put out to pasture.
Right.
But he still has these beats where he is truly a caring father, and where his reactions are based on being a person who feels love for for his entire family that's in this family business that could be brought down by his son's instability, and you can see it breaking his heart. You know, Frank Langella is of course a great actor. Anyone who has watched anything he's done knows this. I just love how they're using him here. It's such every beat that he plays is so smart and so considered, and I feel like it might be slipping into the shadows a little bit because, well, no one's watching the show,
right?
Because it's so very much the Jim Carrey show.
But
I would love to see Frank Langella get a little award recognition for this, if there were any way. But we need to start expanding our award categories to 10, so there's room for things like this.
Well, because there's so much television, we talk about this every time you're on. I agree with you. I think that they should have they should expand it more. Because the amount of TV that's out there is just overwhelming, and the amount of good stuff that might be missed by an audience. And you're talking about Kidding, and I think more people should be watching that show because I think it's absolutely terrific. And you're right. I mean, Langella's great on it, and I would love to see him get recognition.
Yeah, this has been one of my colleague Tim's crusades for a long time, and it's such a real no-brainer. I don't know why more award shows don't just expand the TV categories to 10. It would really make everyone happy. It would make more room for a few more broadcast things. You know, it would make sure that the good plays, for example, managed to get into fields more frequently, as opposed to probably being 6th or 7th or 8th in voting sometimes. So, yeah, I think everyone benefits. So, come on, guys. 10 nominees, every category.
I totally agree. And speaking of The Good Place, wow, that show is just great, man. It's so great, and it just keeps getting better. And I love watching it. It's as far as network shows go, I think it might be the best thing on network TV right now.
Oh, I guess at this exact moment, I can't think of an alternative. And yet, I also like to mention every time we talk about Good Place that anyone who's watching and enjoying The Good Place really should also be watching Superstore before it also, because Superstore does not get the critical hype that The Good Place gets, and it's not as good a show, so don't get me wrong there. But on the other hand, it's not so much a worse show that it should be as entirely out of the conversation as it is. And it's a show that has an amazing ensemble and that really does a great job of slipping social issues and working class social issues into the conversation in ways that are funny and thoughtful and kind of surprise you. They had a great healthcare episode last week or the week before involving two characters having babies, and it was just a wonderfully done episode.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great show, and so there you go. Okay, hang on a second, okay, Dan?
For sure.
Okay, there you go. And Superstore, underrated if there was one. And so there we go. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got more TV to talk about with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here. It's a Thursday morning, and it's Triple Play Thursday, obviously, so get your requests in. We'll play them later. That's one artist, three songs. Get them going. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We got some Thanksgiving topics that we're going to jump into because as we get closer, we'll talk more about it and have more fun with it. We're off the week of Thanksgiving, so we'll do a little Thanksgiving talk coming up here on WGN. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, my guest right now is Dan Feinberg with his biweekly visit. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. Let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. You mentioned in the last segment, you mentioned Tim Goodman, who is your colleague, and you guys did kind of a TV critic debate about fall standouts and stumbles, kind of what you're looking at right now, just kind of a look back at the fall so far. What did you guys talk about? What were some of the things that you discussed?
Oh, our annual lamentation of there being no good new network shows and it seems like every year it gets worse and worse, and sort of have looked back, and we do this conversation basically every year, and the theme of the conversation each year tends to be, okay, so the networks have let us down once again. Is there still good stuff to watch elsewhere? And thankfully, the answer continues to consistently be, yes, there is good stuff to watch elsewhere, though I feel like with each passing year, the networks let us down more and more and more. So, at least 3 years ago, there was The Good Place, but last year, there really wasn't anything great, and this year, there sure as heck isn't. We talked about a lot of the good stuff that's lurking a little bit away from the broadcast networks, and we talked about all manner of stuff, including FX's Mr. In Between, which is a good show that people can binge really quickly and really easily. Only 6 episodes. They're half-hour episodes. It's a hitman kind of comedy from Australia, and it's just a good show, and it's a good show that FX burnt through really, really quickly because they had no real reason not to. They didn't have any way to elongate its run, so I think they aired it 2 episodes per week, and so it was gone in a hurry, but it has been renewed, and that's a show that people should check out because it's quirky and appealing, but people know that they can go to FX to find good TV. We talked about the fact that you can go to less likely places like Facebook Watch, because whatever the heck Facebook Watch is, Sorry for Your Loss, starring Elizabeth Olsen, is a really good, smart, sensitive, occasionally funny, occasionally emotional look at grief, and you wouldn't necessarily know that the show existed at all because Facebook Watch is struggling to really to let people know that it exists. Like, did you know that that Catherine Zeta-Jones has a Facebook Watch series coming out in 2 weeks?
No. No, I did not.
Yeah. Oscar winner Catherine Zeta-Jones has a Facebook Watch half-hour comedy series coming out in a couple weeks about a beauty pageant coach, which sounds a little bit unfortunately like Netflix's Insatiable, which wasn't very good. But Facebook Watch is just struggling to get on the map, really, and this was a show of enough quality that it should have been in conversations, but, you know, it's had trouble breaking through, and we talked a bit about a couple things that are coming up, and that would be a sort of transition. Did you watch any of Homecoming last weekend, Nick?
I did not, and I was just going to ask you about Homecoming. I have not watched it yet.
Excellent. Look at how I transitioned.
Isn't
there.
That great? Isn't that great? I literally, because I wanted to remember to go. I literally wrote the word homecoming on the piece of paper while you were speaking. I'm not kidding.
And you started thinking, am I supposed to be singing a Paul Simon song here? What's happening? Anyway. Yes, Homecoming. You should watch it. It's a good show. I don't think it's a great show. I've heard a lot of people talking about it as a great show, but I think you will really dig it, in large part because, once again, we keep returning to this theme. It's only 10 episodes. They're roughly a half hour apiece. They're, you know, some of them are more in the 33 or 34 minute range. But it goes down really quickly, and it's a solid conspiracy thriller. Sam Esmail from Mr. Robot directed it, and he's having so much fun playing around with conspiracy thrillers from the 60s and 70s, that look and that feel. And the score, the musical score, is literally, to use literally correctly, it is composed only and entirely of snippets from scores from other movies.
Wow.
And so if you're listening and you hear a musical thing that sounds like, God, was that from a Brian De Palma movie? God, was that from Parallax View? The answer is, yeah, it probably is.
Wow.
And so I've seen a couple of people on Twitter being like, God, the score makes no sense. God, the score is too hyper. It's too hyper stylized. Whatever. The score is brilliant. Mm. It is one of the most interesting pieces of soundtrack collage I've ever heard. And if you like those movies, and you don't have to even recognize the score, you can just recognize the sensibility of the score. And if something sounds like it probably came from 3 Days of the Condor or something from that period, the answer is that it probably did, and that's fun. I think that this is a show that works best if you are a genre film geek who enjoys watching the conventions being played around with. It's worth watching. Only 10 episodes. They go by quick, and my recommendation for Amazon is that they do some sort of annotated version of this where you know where every second of the score comes from.
That would be cool. Okay, Dan, hang on, all right?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and we were just talking about Homecoming on Amazon, and he highly recommends it. And we're going to come back. You can follow Dan on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, more with Dan on 720 WGN. Okay, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, downtown Chicago, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and then Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Thursday morning. We're going to talk about some some Thanksgiving related topics and the top dog names. And there you go. Some and much more. As always, our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk all things TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. This is interesting. You know, we talked about the Romanoffs the last time you were on. And since then, they did an episode where they were brought the Me Too movement in. And you were mixed on the show anyway. You thought the show was a mess. At least that's what you said the last time we spoke. But what was it about this particular episode?
This episode, which is the most recent episode, was the first one to ring this hollow and this sour for me. I was really comfortably mixed on the first three. I really enjoy the third episode or installment, the Christina Hendricks horror movie, the international cinema pastiche thing. I think that one was the one that I enjoyed most. It's still fairly uneven, but, you know, it had a lot that I enjoyed. I enjoyed bits and pieces of the first couple. I realized as I was writing my piece about this one that the fourth one I never actually finished, which probably says something also, or maybe just says that there's too much TV and I got distracted and I need to go back to it one way or the other. And it turns out that one was actually the only one that has been under an hour so far. So this week's episode, which is titled Bright and High Circle, which again is directed by Matt Weiner and co-written by Matt Weiner and another collaborator, and it stars, among other people, Ron Livingston, Diane Lane, and Andrew Rannells. And the conceit is that a Russian literature professor, played by Diane Lane, her family's beloved piano teacher, played by Andrew Rannells, is accused under mysterious circumstances of some sort of inappropriate behavior. Basically, a detective asks the Diane Lane character if she knows of anything, but doesn't say who levied any accusations, doesn't say what the accusations were, and immediately this sets people's tongues a-wagging, and the immediate assumption they make is that it must be something sexual, and they begin and they go and they start asking their sons if anything happened with them and the piano teacher, and it becomes this whole thing where simply the accusation and following the herd of the accusation becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and the kids begin to feel uncomfortable around the teacher. And if you don't know that Matt Weiner had a Me Too-related accusation leveled against him by a subordinate writer on Mad Men who claimed sexual harassment in very graphic terms, then the show's about nothing. You know, the show's basically 71 minutes of sort of a Shaggy Dog story about the dangers of following accusations. But if you do know that there was this accusation against Matt Weiner that he's barely addressed at all, he started off, I think, loosely denying it and then said he didn't remember it. And other people who worked on the show at the time have corroborated tangential things, but they weren't in the room at the time, so who knows? And certainly it's had no effect on his career, so, you know, whatever. It becomes this really uncomfortable, non-apology accusation in which he's basically blaming people leveling accusations. And at one point, characters say that it doesn't even, one of the characters in the episode says it doesn't even matter whether or not it's true, because the worst thing that can happen is for people to simply follow the mob, because that changes the way that people look at the accused. And it's really an unpleasant way of addressing an unpleasant thing in which he basically accuses anyone who wondered about the truth of the accusation of being part of a mob against him and being worse than the actual potential alleged act itself.
Wow.
It's ugly.
Wow.
And it's bad. And either you want to say this is his horrible way of addressing accusations against him, or you say this is just a very bad episode of TV that's not about anything. So I think it's entirely fair if you want to say, oh, no, he wrote this long before, he wasn't addressing anything, whatever, who cares. If you want to do that, it's just a bad TV episode that never should have been 71 minutes, and much more so than, and this is already a series of anthology episodes that are all bloated and way too long, and this one is probably really about like 45 minutes too long. I think there's about 10 minutes of story in this. So
wow.
It's either that or... this is a very bad look for Matt Weiner. And I love Mad Men. And I think Matt Weiner is truly brilliant. And this is such a misstep of an episode for me.
Wow. Wow, that's weird.
Yeah, so either this is a bad way of addressing a situation for Matt Weiner, or it's just a bad episode of a TV show.
Right.
And, I've yet to hear anyone actually say that they enjoyed this episode of TV. And that to me ought to be a bigger concern for Matt Weiner as to whether, than whether or not anyone is thinking he did a good job of responding to accusations.
Right.
He did a lot of things in Mad Men that were very on the nose storytelling, that were always great on the nose storytelling. This is an episode made by a person who doesn't appear to know how to tell a story, and that's a worry.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, listen, let's hear about Tell Me a Story. This is on CBS All Access. It's Kevin Williamson's latest project.
It is, and they sent me all critics, really, really scary pig masks that nobody in the Hollywood Reporter office appreciates that I've put out in very prominent display. Look, it's not my fault. They sent me a pig mask. Somebody last year sent me a strange mannequin head. The pig mask goes perfectly on the mannequin head. And if I put it facing out away from my desk so that it stares at everyone who walks by my desk, whose fault is that? It's not my fault. Anyway, Tell Me a Story, which premiered on CBS All Access, comes from Kevin Williamson, who, of course, was responsible for the fantastic Scream, the briefly very, very entertaining Dawson's Creek, Vampire Diaries, which I enjoyed for a long time, and then a bunch of more recent TV shows that have been awful. So this is kind of his way of putting certain fairy tales through a modern prism, but not in the once upon a time way. It's kind of, there are three modern stories that have parallels to... what are they? Little Red Riding Hood, The Three Little Pigs, and Hansel and Gretel.
Mm.
And unfortunately, it seems like it should be entertaining and fun and a neat kind of genre revisionism, because that's a thing that Kevin Williamson used to be really, really good at. Here, he doesn't seem to be very good at it. If you didn't know what the show's conceit was, if you didn't know that fairy tale thing, you'd have a hard time understanding what you were watching or why you were watching it. You'd think that it was just a kind of cable Pulp Fiction knockoff of intersecting vaguely violent stories. The cast is very, very good, including James Wolk from Mad Men and other things. Kim Cattrall plays effectively the grandma from the Little Red Riding Hood story, so mm-hmm. That's kind of amusing casting. It's a really good cast. It's a really, really pretty cast. Paul Wesley from Vampire Diaries, Michael Raymond James from Terriers, a bunch of really good actors, many of whom I quite like. There's just not enough pleasure being taken in what ought to be an entertaining and fun premise. And it's just hard to get into. And having seen a handful of episodes, I don't see much reason to keep going with it, unfortunately. And I haven't heard anyone talking about it at all, except for my coworkers telling me to turn the damn pig mask around. They're talking about it a lot. So that, there you go. That's the buzz I'm building for this one is freaking out my coworkers with the pig head.
With the pig mask.
But nobody has said, ooh, cool pig mask. Now I need to watch Tell Me a Story on CBS All Access.
Right.
And And similarly, I haven't told anyone, hey, if you like this pig mask that's scaring you, you really want to watch Tell Me a Story on CBS All Access. So this is not going to be the thing that I'm going to tell anyone they need to get CBS All Access for.
Okay.
Good Fight, on the other hand, absolutely.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's move on to Legacies. Tell us a little bit about that.
Legacies is the latest ongoing extension of the, speaking of Kevin Williamson, yep, Vampire Diaries franchise. And so Vampire Diaries begot the originals. The originals begot Legacies. And Legacies is, it takes a couple of the characters from originals and also Vampire Diaries, but really what it is they can get away with making lots of references to Harry Potter because it's a Warner Brothers TV show, and apparently Warner Brothers doesn't care. So it's about a school for vampires, werewolves, and witches, young vampires, werewolves, and witches. It also looks suspiciously like Professor Xavier's school from the X-Men franchise, comic, film, and otherwise. And it's a lot like any other story of a school for extraordinary children that you might have seen. And that's not necessarily bad. It's just a very light version of that. So even Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which I'm mixed on, eventually, once it gets to its Witching Academy, is a good deal more specific and interesting, but with a very comparable venue. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the kind of show where if you like these characters and you like the decade of jargon that the show has developed, all of the talk about hybrids and compelling and all of the Salvatore family lore, if you're kind of into that, there's a pleasant familiarity to hearing these characters talk this way and hearing them be part of this world. It's not a show that, if you haven't watched Vampire Diaries of the Originals, is really worth tuning in for. Mm-hmm. But if you accidentally found yourself doing so, you'd find that you could hop right into it because it looks like so many other different shows of a comparable type that you've found before. It's really not bad. It's just not good exactly. But yeah, it's not the worst thing you could do if you happen to be a Vampire Diaries, Mystic Falls, et cetera, fan.
Okay. That's on the CW. That's Legacies. Okay. Before we go, I just wanted to mention two tweets that you had that I thought were great. For perspective, this World Series game has lasted as long as an average season of BoJack Horseman or an average episode of Ozark. Hello.
Oh, that was the 18. That was the 18-hour,
right?
18-hour, 18-inning
game. Yeah.
Yes, that was crazy. As a Red Sox fan, that game was extremely frustrating for me. The rest of the series after that game was extremely satisfying.
Of course, yes, so. Yes, and then finally. Honestly, NBC should just give Megyn Kelly's slot to Gritty. Any mention of Gritty, and I am happy. So I just...
I love Gritty.
I do, too.
I love Gritty.
So
I hear some people don't love Gritty. I am so much a fan of Gritty and all that Gritty represents.
Yep.
Hail Gritty, I say.
I am with you 100. I absolutely adore Gritty. I happen to have a weakness for mascots in general. They just crack me up. But I have to say that Gritty is just exceptional, and so I'm glad that you actually mentioned Gritty because I'm pro Gritty. Let me just say that right now. So
and you're actually allowed to say that as a Blackhawks fan. It doesn't cause you to get in any trouble.
No, it doesn't, and it doesn't. I mean, I don't care about the team. I hate the Flyers, but I love Gritty. So
okay, yeah.
So all right, Dan, always a pleasure. Now we're not going to talk to you for a couple of weeks here because I'm on vacation the week of Thanksgiving, so the next time that we're going to talk will be Thursday, December 6th. So have a nice break, and we'll talk to you afterwards.
Looking forward to that, and there will be plenty of TV to discuss a month from now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're almost a month away. That means there will be 55,000 new TV shows to talk about in that time period.
talk to you then.
All right, Dan, take care. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody. We won't talk to him for a couple of weeks because of the holiday, but he'll be back. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him and should follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we'll talk to him in a few weeks. All right, let's take a break here on 720 WGN.